I'm not sure about you, but I find Epiphany to be a strange feast. I think part of it is because we are in the Southern Hemisphere, and therefore it falls into our holiday time, and everyone's away. In the Northern Hemisphere, they are not so much in holiday mode as we are. It almost become a bit of a blink and you miss it reality, I think. Many may be surprised to know that Epiphany is older than Christmas as a feast in the church. It was commenced mainly by the Gnostics, as it centred around a festival of the light. In one of the great ironies of the church, as the Gnostic heresy was eliminated, the season it founded remained, and initially Epiphany was celebrated at the same time as the baptism of Jesus. When Constantine came to the throne in about 325 AD, there was a dispute over the claims of the heretic Arius about Jesus being a creature. Constantine ordered the theologians to meet in Nicaea, and Athanasius won the day. As a result, there was a need to separate the birth of Jesus from his baptism. The eastern part of the church strongly resisted this separation, and so a compromise was reached. How very Anglican, even if it was 1,000 years before the Anglican Church. December 25 was then set aside as the birth of Jesus, which was a favourite date for Constantine, and the 12 days of Christmas to Epiphany on the 6th of January was the result, with the emphasis at that time on the revelation of Jesus to the Gentiles. So, what are we to make of all of this? Well, one of the great gifts of the Feast of Epiphany is that it was inadvertently separated from what was eventually going to become the sentimentalisation of Christmas. The problem with Christmas is that we tend to goo and gar over a baby, but miss the momentous point of the Incarnation, that despite all that is going wrong in the world, God does not give up on us and sends his Son, his only Son, into the world to save us, to redeem us, and to sanctify us. The Feast of Epiphany blows all this sentimentality out of the water, if we look at it properly. The feast is centred on the arrival of the three astrologers from the east looking for a king. They arrive in Jerusalem, and their presence brings about excitement until they learn why they are actually there. The revelation that a king is born in Jewry unsettles everyone, not least King Herod. He does not want to be usurped. And so, with the help of the theologians, they settle on the reality that the king must be born in Bethlehem and are sent on their way with instructions to return and to let Herod know where this child is. The Magi cannot possibly know what horror is about to be unleashed as a result of their visit. They go, find the child, and return another way as a result of a dream. Herod, in his fury, murders all the male children in Bethlehem up to the age of 2, just to be sure. Here is one of the points of Epiphany. When God knowingly acts in the world responds negatively. For the world does not want to submit to the will of God, even though it ultimately will not win against the one who created it. Another point is this: in the darkness, there is hope. So, yes, the baby boys are brutally murdered by a despotic king, but God still triumphs in the end. The baby Jesus is saved by the faithful actions of Joseph and the obedience of the Magi, and God's plan of salvation cannot be stopped. It might take a few detours, but in the end, as revealed in the book of Revelation, it is inevitable. When we look at the other epiphanies in the Gospels, and yes, there are more than one, we see the same sort of pattern of the world responding negatively to the revealing of the saving plan of God, and its attempt, that is the world's attempt, to derail it. The baptism of Jesus is another epiphany, and is probably why it was celebrated in the same time of the visit of the Magi. Jesus comes out of the water of the Jordan, and a dove alights, and a voice speaks, "This is my Son, listen to him." This is a much more obvious epiphany than the visit of the Magi, and we'll see as we go through the various epiphanies that the events become more and more overt. They are the only ones to see him, that is, the Magi. They are the only ones to see him. They make no conversation with Mary and Joseph that we are aware of, although I highly doubt they simply sort of showed up, dropped their gifts, and left. At the baptism, there is a crowd, an obvious event of the splitting open of the heavens, the descending of the Holy Spirit as a dove, and a voice, if a bit indistinguishable to the crowd. What happens next, though, is consistent with the first epiphany. The world reacts. Jesus immediately is led or expelled into the wilderness, depending on which gospel you read, and there for 40 days and 40 nights is there in prayer, fasting. And at the end of this time, when he is at his weakest moment, the tempter arrives and attempts to derail the plan of God a second time by getting Jesus to abandon the plans of God and to worship him. The next epiphany is that of the Transfiguration. If the first two were not clear enough, this epiphany could not be any clearer. Here the three disciples are invited to see Jesus in his resurrected glorification and is accompanied with Moses and Elijah, signifying to the disciples that Jesus is the fulfilling of the law and the prophets. Again, as with the other two, there is a price to pay for this epiphany, and this time the price is the death of Jesus on the cross. This time it seems that the world has triumphed. God's plans have been thwarted. God is not as powerful or as clever as God thinks. The world can now relax. That pesky creator of the world is no more. The creation can just get on with doing whatever it wants, however it wants. However, it is not the end, and the next epiphany completely shatters the worldview of the disciples. Jesus returns to them. Like the first epiphany with the Magi, this is a private event. The world continues as it did then in blissful ignorance of the reality that is unfolding behind closed doors. The next epiphany is, of course, the Ascension and the promised return of Jesus. But that is not the end of the story. The Ascension is not the final epiphany, for in reality, epiphanies do not stop occurring. Pentecost, the empowering of the disciples and the apostles, is also an epiphany that sets in motion an ongoing series of epiphanies that the world will continue to resist. As the disciples and as the apostles continue to tell the world about Jesus, who he is and why he matters, and why they should put their faith and trust into him, they run into opposition. James is beheaded. The church is persecuted. Paul is arrested and put in prison. Eventually, Peter and Paul are also martyred, along with countless other Christians over time. The story of Epiphany is a sobering one. It counters the saccharine of Christmas. God coming among us is not about a sweet baby born in comfort and adored by all. The response to the presence of God is not adoration and obedience, but resistance, rejection, violence, trouble, death. The Epiphany beckons us back to the real world after the indulgence of Christmas. Even in the depths of despair, after the murder of the boys in Bethlehem, comes the ultimate news that God does not give up on us. He continues to persevere in our lives and in our world, seeking to change and transform it with his presence in our lives. The Isaiah 60 reading for Epiphany makes the point that while darkness covers the earth, the light of God shines on his people. In other words, despite all the despair, all the hopelessness in the world, God is still sovereign and is still operating in the world and overcoming the world. This past year has seen the pandemic bring about a new darkness over our world. People's lives have been torn apart and lost, livelihoods lost. We have become prisoners in our own homes. We have become separated from our loved ones. Some have not even been able to mourn properly the death of loved ones, even if they haven't died of COVID. We need to celebrate the Feast of Epiphany even more joyously than ever this year. For in the Feast of Epiphany is the reality that God is knee-deep in the mess of our lives and the life of our world, shining His light into our world and into our lives to give us a new sense of hope, a new sense of purpose, that even if all looks bleak, even in a pandemic, God is there at our side, but only if we let Him in and allow Him to be Lord and King of our lives and not allow the world to have that place in His stead. The Lord be with you.